Pseudopod, episode 127, January 30th, 2009. This week's story, The Garden and the Mirror, by Tim W. Burke. Hello, welcome to Pseudopod, the weekly horror podcast. I'm Alistair, your host, and this week's story comes to us from Tim W. Burke. Tim has had work published in Weird Tales, The Wildering Stories, The Town Drunk, The Willows, and A Fly in Amber, amongst others, and this is his first appearance here. Your narrator this week has crossed oceans of time. That's all I'll say. So, breathe deeply and let the healing begin, because I have a story for you, and I promise you it's true. The Garden and the Mirror, by Tim W. Burke. She asked me, "Will you teach me the secrets of the soul and flesh?" Her eyes glowed like onyx in the gaslight, her skin seemed translucent. But the young man fidgeting beside her on my drawing room sofa was paler still. His fine suit and shirt sagged on him, the cadaver in him emerging. The young man blanched at her boldness. "My wife has always been an enthusiast for mysticism. Back home in Atlanta, we tried homeopathy, faith healing, and God knows how many quacks. But the tumour grows. My fevers are getting worse. I can't even travel home because my head aches. Mr. Alexandri," the young woman, Olivia Spaulding, leaned to me, "our friends here told us that you cured their little boy of consumption. I remember the case. I taught the boy to banish it. Can you do that with any disease?" The man, Thomas, smiled. "My wife means to get to the point. Can you do that with the tumour in my brain?" She rejoined, "I mean, with any disease." Faint pink crept into Thomas's cheeks. I said, "It is a simple feat of will. My family studied with fakirs who could stop their hearts and survive, or reverse their peristalsis. This was child's play for them. Their masters could bend the very cells of their body, cause burns to appear on their skin, slow aging. I digress. The tumour can be suppressed. It is not infused with soul. A fetus, for example, cannot be suppressed, because those cells are infused with soul and demand shape. Flesh can be damaged by disease, but a soul within it will still make use of it. Depending on the damage and on the qualities of the soul can heal that damage. It will take much work to cure your tumour, Mr. Spaulding. I can teach you." Thomas nodded and smiled faintly. Olivia rose and presented her hand. We shook, and I could feel the firmness of her grasp through her muslin gloves. Her eyes were piercing and eternal, like those of the idol of Parvati in the garden where I played alone as a child. So began Thomas Spaulding's training. Every afternoon I visited the Spauldings at their gated, secluded home past Beacon Hill. As the autumn winds pressed at the windows, we spoke in their sitting room. I educated him in the proper diet, drew the yantra patterns that Thomas needed to concentrate upon, taught him how to chant the proper mantras and to imagine his tumour dwindling. Olivia insisted on attending every session. She absorbed everything, even participated in meditation. While Thomas rested in his rooms at the end of each session, she and I retired to her parlour, darkened with dusk. We were alone, as she allowed servants in the house only a few days a week. Songbirds fluttered in shadowed cages, and in glass-lined terrariums, tropical plants were being coaxed to grow. My father had told me many times, "To possess is to be enslaved, to grasp is to destroy and be destroyed." But in this disheartening chamber, Olivia whispered insightful questions. She asked to borrow translated texts to study, which I was pleased to supply. The more she learned, the more inflamed her bright mind became. I came to admire her. By spring, Thomas was changing. He had stopped fidgeting. His skin colour was rosier. His breathing was deeper and more relaxed. Olivia marvelled at the improvement. After a session one afternoon, he paused at the door and smiled. "My headaches are subsiding, and I believe I am gaining weight again. I am so grateful. I look forward so to returning to Atlanta." We shook hands warmly, but I had regrets. He paid me, and their hansom took me home. Late that night, there was a knock. Olivia stood on my doorstep. "Cyril, I must learn everything. Do you truly know how to project your soul to other places, as the book said? The secrets of extended life? The eternal soul?" Yes. Such things are dangerous. Teach me. I don't care how long it takes. I am meant to learn. My soul soared. Never was there anyone like her. My family had been devout and ascetic. I loved them deeply and revered their teachings. But I was Romani and grew up in the land of the Mughals. Then a fakir scratching out a living in the land of the Christian. My father taught that acceptance was an illusion, and my every moment of life had affirmed that. Was he wrong? It sang in me, listening to Olivia, that there was more. But it was so dangerous. Many nights she begged. I've been searching for so long. Her face twisted with disgust. I lived in New Orleans during the yellow fever pandemic. My parents and four brothers died. They were tossed in a mass grave. I came to live with my aunt here in Boston, and she died of pneumonia. Your husband wishes to return to Atlanta when his cure is complete. He wishes to resume his life with you in society. He believes what you teach is merely curative. I know that what you teach can shape reality. He is a good man. He was dying, and you saved him, and still he refuses to see beyond his steady, safe life. Thomas disgusts me. Then leave him. I have no means. And my studying with you, both of our reputations would be ruined. It would be the end of your practice. Many have lived with much less, but her anguish smothered that thought. That the tumour could return disgusts me, she said. She smelled of jasmine blossoms like the garden of Parvati, who was one with Devi, the eternal female. As a boy, I believed that I would be like Parvati and would one day find my Devi, who knew and wanted to learn and wanted to be a part of me. As a young man, there were many years of anguish as that belief was buried alive. To have someone who understands, that was worth any risk. It could return, I said. She raised her dark, adamant eyes and smiled. Teach me the secret. Never leave me. The contract was set. My soul thirsted for her. I gave Mr. Spaulding new yantra. As summer came, he worsened. Thomas grew more desperate. His headaches returned and his weight dwindled. I grieved for what I was doing to him. Olivia often stole away evenings to my apartments. We explored the universe through tantra. Each night, the grief fueled my desire. On my bed, the ocean breeze cooled first our robes, then our bodies. We touched and coaxed each other, experiencing all of the senses, the scent of gardens and jasmine and the sea. There were moments when I had transcended the physical and saw us from above, our naked limbs entwined in grace and bliss. One night she quoted, "Immune to harm am I, dead as I am to the world, though still alive. When my mind was cleansed of impurities like a mirror of its dust and dirt, I recognized the self in me. When I saw him dwelling in me, I realized that he was the everything and I was nothing." When we discussed the secrets we discovered, our eyes glowed. In the daytime sessions, in Thomas's eyes, there was the bright lantern's beam of anguish, the spark of resolve, and one hot August night, while Olivia and I were together, he burst in. He raised a revolver. "I know your treachery. You mean to kill me and have my wife. I know she is under your magic." He pulled the trigger. The room seemed to explode. A titanic blow knocked me from the bed to the floor. My consciousness receded, my heart seized, and I died. I found myself watching the proceedings from above my sprawled corpse. Olivia screamed. Thomas shouted at her about jail and scandal. He wrapped a robe around her and pulled her out into the night, an unseen thunderhead of rage. I followed them back to their home. But there was nothing I could do. The next morning, brimming with new, fierce will, Thomas Spaulding meditated with the former, correct yantras and mantras. He would return to health eventually. Olivia spent her days wandering their house, trembling with hysteria. My spirit raged through their rooms. I was cheated of bliss after a lifetime alone. The fool Thomas would squander his life selling and buying and grasping whilst the truest treasure wept alone. My presence only gave them a chill. But there was one last chance. Fakirs had been reincarnated through acts of will. I knew the ways to focus my mind. All I needed was an aperture back to the world of the living. There was but one. I pushed my deepest measure of will upon it and battled my way into its very cells. I became alive again. I drew sustenance from the throbbing, blood-rich body around me. Day after day I gathered and strained my will and stitched myself anew, cell by cell. And outside my womb I could sense something, a fierce, anguished soul, one that reminded me of sweet jasmine. It sensed and probed and welcomed. I would be reborn. Dark hours. It took dark hours and dark days of concentration in the blackness, drawing blood as nourishment, knitting each nerve and organ and bone and muscle, cell by cell. My new flesh ached and itched. It took weeks. My will frayed. My patience snapped. I could wait no longer. I would be reborn now. Trembling with anticipation, I stretched. My back cut through warm pulp. My dark will thrashed in response. I punched. The rocking stopped. I clawed and bit until I cut into a round, wet mass. From outside my dark world, there was a strange thumping, like the chopping of a log. My dark world swayed as if being carried, then suddenly dropped with a thump. I punched through the round mass, fingered two flaps and forced them open. I squeezed out of the opening and slid out into the world. Dirt squeezed between my wet fingers. A frond towered over me, smelling of water. Behind me was Thomas Spalding's dead face, almost twice my new height, with its ruptured left eye. Olivia stood across the room in moonlight, but she seemed hazy and warped as if she was under clear ice. I put my tiny grey hand out and touched glass. A smooth wall of glass. I squinted. My new form reflected in the glass, mottled grey and crudely shaped from the tumour, draped with strands of gore. But my eyes were the same. Olivia ran to me, towering above me. She cried in ecstasy. I sensed you, just like in the books. I remembered what you had said about will and cells and fetuses. Only your will could have sped the tumour despite his meditation, so I kept him out of hospital. Beyond her was a room, rich with brocade and dark wood, lit by a single table lamp. Beside the light, a figure in white sheets lay in a brass bed. Near the headboard, the white was drenched with dark. My skin chilled with drying blood. She regarded me through the glass, her eyes now, not like Parvati, but fiery, like those from another face of Devi, the one called Kali. Teach the secrets, she whispered. Never, never leave me. Keep me safe. Never leave me. Above me, the lid slammed the terrarium shut. Ignorance, my friends, as Joe Pantoliano once put it, is bliss, but sometimes knowledge truly is power. When I first read this story, I was big enough to admit, both to myself and to the completely uncaring hordes of DVDs in the room in which I record these outros, that I had no idea what a yantra was. So, I did what any self-respecting 21st century internet user would do. I hit Google. Then I hit Wikipedia. Yantras, it turns out, are fascinating. They're pieces of art, similar in some ways to mandalas, that are designed to focus the mind on a spiritual concept. The exact nature of the device, for want of a better word, is summed up in its various meanings. It's namely, any instrument or machine, any instrument for holding, restraining, or fastening, in this case, holding the essence of a concept or allowing the mind to fasten onto a particular idea, or a mystical or astronomical diagram. Yantra symbols include a dot or bindu that represents the starting point of creation, the shatkona, which is more commonly known in this hemisphere as the Star of David, and the swastika in its original meaning, which was as a symbol that means good luck, prosperity, or spiritual victory. And I would of course like to apologise if I have, as I almost certainly have, mispronounced any of those words. There's a term which I came across in my research that's used sometimes to describe mandalas, which is concept looms, and it's one I just can't get out of my head. The idea of externalizing the thought process, of using an outside influence to move beyond your own way of thinking and in turn gain perspective on it, is in a universal one. After all, at the core of everything from fiction reading and exercise to drug use, is the basic need to escape, to do something that unlocks the door of the cage for a little while, allowing you to just be, just do, instead of being aware of everything around you. Of course, on some level, that's what writing is as well. The choice to accept the difficulties inherent in moving a short story beyond your head, bringing it into the world and shaping it. It's not easy, something I know all too well, as this week has seen the triumphant fifth draft of a piece originally intended as 1,500-word flash commissioned in the middle of December finally come into view. And it's been hard and difficult and frustrating, and I have been reminded time and time again of all the stuff that should be on the page but remains in my head. But it's been worth every single step. Because you finish the journey, you return home, changed and rested, and that alone makes setting out in the first place worthwhile. Or, to put it another way, you always need to know where your towel and your yantra are. Pseudopod relies on you to pay its authors, so if you liked this story, please go to pseudopod.org and click on Feed the Pod. I promise you won't regret it. Pseudopod is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. And Pseudopod looked in that room just a second ago and no one was there.